Can you hear the music?
I can.
Oh, hell yeah, you can, man. Get me fired up. Just amp. I had this custom made. I'm trying to get lyrics added to it.
Oh.
Yeah, we're getting lyrics added to it as soon as Sergeant Boychuk can come back on the podcast.
Nice.
All right, welcome back to another episode of On the Throne with Dick. And shout out to Sanjin Boychuk for that, you know, incredible intro, outro music. Find him everywhere on the socials at Sanjin Boychuk. You know, just a stellar human being. He made that for us like 100 weeks ago, just about, you know, almost 100 weeks ago. And you know, like that's over a year ago, a year and a bit ago now. And man, before that, I was using just the, you know, default music in the program, and it didn't feel right or good to me. And, you know, getting your own jingles and stuff like that, it costs money. And at the time, I'm like, I don't know where this podcast is going. I don't know if I can, you know, justify dropping the money for that. Now I probably would, but like back then it was like, you know, I don't know if this will go another 10 episodes or not. Right. And here we are, you know, almost 100 weeks later. So, you know, shout out to Sanjin Boychuk, man. And I'm excited for this week's episode, you know, Colton Archangel. You know, are you the founder of the, you know, Archangel mental health and addictions sort of?
Yeah, I guess I am owner, founder, whatever.
It's cool, man.
Started it.
I remember like you and I first talking back in like, I want to say May, June, you know, and we were chatting and you reached out to me and you're like, hey man, like, you know, this is what's going on, you know, in mental health and whatnot with blue collar. And here's what I'm seeing. I'm a flight attendant, you know, taking blue collar workers back and forth to camp. I'm having all these conversations and, you know, this is where my field is, in my specialty is essentially outside of here. And, you know, like, there's a disconnect somewhere between, you know, the help that, you know, these men are looking for, these men and women are looking for, and the actual, like, you know, people that are offering the help. There's a disconnect there. Right. And so like, yeah, you thought, I need to get into this and I need to, you know, tap into what there is to do. And man, the conversations you and I have had back and forth for the last like 6-7 months, like you're quickly finding out that like, a lot of people aren't in it actually to help. They're actually just in it because, ooh, there's money in it, right? And like, you know, they don't care about the actual help side of things.
Yeah, no, you summed it up pretty good there. No, the disconnect is real. I you know, flying as a flight attendant, love that job. Just love it. And yeah, we specialized in the work camps and it was always the same guys. And I, you know, it would be these galley conversations, waiting for the bathroom, that type of thing. And they would, they'd ask me what I do, what I'm trained in for a living. I'd talk about being a nurse, therapist, whatnot, addictions. And they'd be like, oh, you know, there's so many guys struggling and, you know, we could really use some help that, you know, actually works for these guys. And I was like, well, what isn't working? And essentially the answer I was getting was everything. You know, it doesn't surprise me for a number of reasons. First of all, we don't actually differentiate much when we're taught as therapists between demographics. It's kind of blueprint, just here's how to help someone, you know, in this many sessions, whatnot. And they don't differentiate very well between men, women, you know, jobs, that type of thing. And there, we've known that men working in the trades, blue collar construction, are disproportionately affected by like addiction, suicide, everything mental health compared to the general population. But the general reasoning that the academics have come up with is just, oh, men don't want to talk about their feelings. And then on the plane for these discussions, I realized, no, that's not it at all. There's a lot more going on and no one is talking about it. no one's researching it. No one's even interested in doing it. I, you know, met so many guys and heard their stories, and I actually found it really inspiring, the degree of resilience that these guys had. And, you know, I met guys who just, you know, they've been through prison, they learned a trade after, and they've completely turned their life around all on their own without much help at all. And asked about experiences with therapists, things like that. And, you know, the common answer I got is, you know what, man, it's not that guys don't want to talk. That's what everyone says. There's so much more to it. And, you know, so many things that we've never been trained to think about. Like, I mean, you're going away from home to camp for weeks at a time, leaving a kid behind, leaving a wife behind. And then the uncertainty of jobs, like you may have a job and, you know, work for X number of months, and then the project might complete. When's the next job going to be? All that financial pressure.
Yeah.
And I found, you know, just from my training that that is all kind of overlooked, and just they stamp this, men don't want to talk, toxic masculinity, blah, blah, blah. But they're not looking at these other things. And there are things that really stress guys out, and also injuries, physical injuries, and not being able to work, and insurance.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, the worries people have, they're real, and no one's really addressing them. And I have my kind of theories for that. And there's a lot of differences between kind of the blue collar world and the white collar world. Therapy, doctors, whatnot, we're kind of in the white collar world. And I can tell you, we don't really have a clue what the blue collar world is actually doing day to day. I can safely say that if you're going to go into a therapist's office, a doctor's office, talk about what your actual job is, if you're millwright, whatnot, chances are the doctor, the therapist doesn't even know what that is. So how good is the advice they're going to give you, right?
And yeah, exactly, man. And you know what, like you're saying, okay, the men that, you know, have all these mental health issues, right? They weren't given the tools, right? They weren't given the proper tools, you know, whether or not growing up like that or whatnot, they weren't given the tools to talk about what they have. They have to essentially go out there, get the experience. It's like a mechanic, right? You get a mechanic's apprentice. He has to borrow tools from the Red Seal or the Journeyman until he has enough money to start buying his own, right? Well, his tool bag is empty, right? But as he goes, he learns, okay, I need this tool, and I need this tool. And he fills his bag full of tools, right? Next thing you know, he's got a toolbox, right? Same with mental health and men in the trades, right? Like, we don't have the tools because we're not given the tools. But how are we supposed to be given the tools when the people that are supposed to help us don't have the tools to help us either, right? Like, the system is very broken. Like you just said, the doctor doesn't know anything about what we do and what we stand for and how to go about it, right? So how is the doctor that's supposed to help us when they don't even know what they're doing? You know, that's pretty crazy. That's a pretty wild connection we're making here.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I really got interested in it, and I've never been an in-the-box thinker. In fact, the public system, you know, I worked in there as manager, director, moved up. I hated it. I hated every minute of those jobs. High paying, you got the power, the title, but it's the system is in a way that it's almost designed to say no. Like, someone comes in for help, there's such a strict criteria, number of sessions, whatever. It's almost like it's training and prepping to say no to people.
Yeah.
That's not my style.
Well, look at the thing that happened in New York with the United Healthcare CEO, right?
Oh yeah.
Like, man, you got a guy that has been, his whole job is to deny people, right? His whole job is to be like, oh, nope. Right. And for every like thousand no's, he says yes. Yes. And then back to nope. And we're wondering, you know, like, the guy that, you know, did this thing, like, it was a heinous crime that he committed on an innocent human being. That was just Buddy's job, right? He was paid to put there, be like, nope, right? To save money, to save the system money anywhere he could, right? And it's happening here too, right? But like, at some point, you're just like, and there's a reason why this guy, Luigi Mangione or whatever his name is, isn't being villainized by the public, right? It's because everybody's feeling that way. The only difference that keeps us from going out there and blowing someone away every day is you know, this is what separates us from the animals, right? Is our self-control. We all have self-control. We all have a fear of the consequences of that, right? We're like, you know, we can't do that. You get a guy who's been through the ringer mental health-wise, right? That thinking, that level of thinking is gone, right? To him, he is so far gone. Dude, I mentioned to you earlier, the last 6 months has been, my mental health has been put through the ringer, right? I can't tell you like how close at times there was where like, you know, I was thinking about my mom and my dad. My mom and my dad have lost their shit. They've had mental breaks, right? My mom and my dad have both spent time in a nut house, right? And we shouldn't be calling it a nut house. They spent time in a psychiatric ward, right? Yeah. And my mom was like talking about how people were threatening to release her sex tape. My mom doesn't have a sex tape, bro. And you know, not that I know of, I would have seen it by now. and I hope. And no, not really. But like, people were trying to steal her money. She don't have no money. People like the Westboro Baptist Church are coming after her. They're chasing after her, and she's hearing things in her hearing aids. Well, she lost her hearing aids. She doesn't have them, right? My dad, same thing, was hallucinating. He was hallucinating. He was seeing things, right? My dad, blue collar, right? He spent his whole life grinding for his family, blowing his body to shit. Granted, that was self-inflicted, blowing your body to shit. There were tools there for him, and he knew that, like, you know, knee pads and, you know, bend at the knees, not at the back, and like that. So, you know, by the time he was 50, his knees were done. Right. His back was done. Right. And his body, he pushed his body and he didn't take care of it either. I'll give you that. But like, you know, you got all these people, you know, deny. Boom. One guy who, and there, how many more guys are there out there like that are at their breaking point because the system is failing them. And this guy here just happened to be the guy that was part of failing them. Right. And, you know, so yeah.
Well, yeah, the Canadian system's not that much different than the American one in that respect. Sure, it's publicly funded, but they got to provide the same standard to everyone. And saying no speeds up the stats, gets through people, whatnot. But, you know, if you're a therapist in the public system, you might have a max of 5 sessions with someone. Maybe for a few, that's enough, but usually it ain't. And that therapist might not even be a good fit. But this whole process, you know, WCB is, don't get me started on them, but it's all about saying no.
It's all about saying no, and it takes forever.
Yeah. And I've had, you know, when I was working up north and I was a bit more on the emergency medicine side of things, I had guys come in that worked in mines that didn't have WCB coverage are begging me not to report it to WCB. And then I'm listening to their injury and everything. And I'm like, okay, so you had this back pain going on for days. You were borrowing T4s from someone else. You ran out. You couldn't push yourself anymore. Yeah. And I'm like, what made you keep pushing yourself? And he's like, this is the only job I get in a year to make all my money. And, you know, if they knew, they pulled me off work right away. I wouldn't get the money. Or I'd get blamed for not using the right mechanics, that type of thing. Like, it's insane. And then you expect someone like that who's going through pain or a mental health issue to kind of fight the system. Because really, you got to fight for what you want. And when you're not feeling good mentally, that's very hard to do. Absolutely. And I mean, I've been fucking the system for, you know, 15 years. I'm very good at finding where all the goodies are and all the little tricks and the forms and what to write, what not to write. But it's hard. It's hard work. And yeah, someone who's depressed, anxious, you know, they got a little bit of psychosis going on, whatever it is, they can't do that work. And there's timelines. And then, oh, you're out. You're out of luck. Nothing you can do. And we're not addressing the issue. We're not saving the system money. We're saving companies money. And we're saving health regions money. And in my opinion, then that opens up money to create a bunch of useless jobs and red tape, but we're not actually solving the root of the issue.
No. And you were talking about WCB being a pain in the ass. Let's jump into EI, right? A guy has to pay, and he doesn't get a choice whether he pays a certain percentage into his EI every year, right? EI comes out, yada, yada, yada. And then if you lose your job, if you don't want to work at that job, you have to jump through so many hoops just to get your own money back, right? Like they can deny you. They can say, nope, you didn't. This is the way in which you left that job. We can't give you that money. Well, that's my money, right? Like you literally took time that I've donated to that, to my emergency fund, right? And you're not giving it back to me. Most people will never see that money again because most people don't go after that because I've been on EI before, right? From the time you lose your job until the time you actually see a payment, it could be 2 months, right? How far behind are you in the bills by 2 months in, right? How far, you know, that is insane, man. It's crazy. The WCB thing and the EI thing and, oh, dude, it all adds up, man. Like our system is not there to help us, right? And we've said this before. No. The working class feels like we're at war with our government. And right, and it's been like that for a long time. It's not just Canada. Every working class across the country feels like they're constantly at war trying to justify themselves every day of their life to the government.
You know what? I was in healthcare management. I worked up to the level of director. Yeah. One of the things that was so miserable about that was that you're always presenting, even in a publicly funded hospital, your finances every month. And the more you can save on this, on that, the WCB claims that you can put your employer report in and deny, that's all rewarded.
Yeah.
And people are at war. And then the thing is, I've been on EI too. I've had to take medical EI. Just having the knowledge of the system and helping people navigate it, I'm pretty good at finding out how to do the forms right and everything to get approved, but it's always a fight. It always is. I like helping people with that fight, but when I was working in the traditional system, they don't really look up to people that want to do that fight for patients or help them. It kind of goes against the grain.
Have you heard the song To Be a Man by Dax? He was all over TikTok this summer. To Be a Man.
You know, I probably have, but it doesn't, you know, spring.
Men get put on the shelf. Men get put on the shelf so easily, right? They come off the shelf and they go right to war with their mental health.
Yeah. Right?
Like it's mind-boggling, dude. And like I listen to a lot of podcasts, right? I love my own podcast and I'll listen to that and whatnot, but I'm friends with a lot of other podcasters, right? And I don't know if you know who Gord Kightley is for the Second Act podcast. He's been on mine a lot. But his most recent episode, and I can't remember the name of the guy he did it with. He was talking about men's mental health and mental health in general. And did you know, like, let's go this way for a second, right? At work and whatnot, and the divorce rate, right? You want to talk about that? Do you know what the rate is at for men versus women when it comes to suicide after divorce?
You know, I don't know it off the top of my head, but I'm going to go ahead and guess it's a lot higher for the men.
It's 10-1. Mm-hmm. 10-1. And dude, it is incredible the way. I'll send you this episode of the podcast after to listen to. It's 48 minutes of the most excellent podcast I've ever heard in my life, man. Like, you know what I mean? It was mind-changing. Where I was at with my own mental health at the time, and it felt like proper timing, like right place, right time. And it was just the most incredible episode I've ever listened to. 48 minutes of pure excellence. And he said something. He's like, there's moments in people's life, right? These things happen, okay? There's the feather, the brick, and the truck. Most people ignore the feather because it tickles, right? Whatever. It's the feather moment. The feathers come at you and they tickle, so you ignore them. The brick will hurt, but you can ignore the brick too, right? Now, where it really starts to get complicated is that truck. That truck is coming for you and it's going to hit you. And when it hits you, you can't ignore it. It takes you out, right? It's like if we started dealing with things when they were still feathers, and maybe you could let it get to the brick, we could avoid the truck altogether. And that was just like, oh, that was, dude, when I heard that, that was just like some of the most insightful and just like brilliant pieces of like just anything I've ever heard before.
Yeah, and it's, you know what? It's shocking that that's a shocking concept, because they've been doing that in physical health forever. Like, look at, you know, childhood vaccinations, that type of thing, you know, preventative health, whatnot. But mental health, you know, the way things are now, it's not until the truck hits that you get any help. And that's really unfortunate. And I just, you know, I would really like to see employers, you know, unions, different groups kind of step up to kind of provide that stuff at the brick level. Like, some of the feather stuff, it's good to develop on your own.
Yeah.
That own personal stuff. But no, I mean, we're just not doing enough to prevent. We're just dealing with crisis after crisis. It's the same with, like, you know, these injuries, the back pain, the opioid crisis. So many of the guys, because I sit on a national advisory committee for addictions, mental health, and trades and construction, and it's a good committee. The right people are in charge of that committee. You guys, the workers, us, you know, kind of consultants, we're on the other side of the table. We're giving advice and taking questions. You know, so many of them who had lived experience with opioid addiction, like, it started with an injury, puts them out of work. Then you got the surgical wait list. You're taking it for a few years. You get depressed, you get down, money, EI, all that shit. You know, the medication also makes you feel a little bit better, you know, and then with that amount of time before surgery to fix things, addiction, dependence, it just happens. And a lot of them, you know, feel very angry at the system for that. Like, how could they let this happen? And it's, you know, like, it just sit there and I'm like, I hear you. And you're right to be angry. It is failing you guys. It's failing everyone. But, you know, like I said, there's just not enough understanding of what blue collar people actually do. And then there's a bit of a, in the white collar world, you know, I can make some enemies by saying this, but I'm just going to say the truth. In the white collar world, there's a little bit of an attitude of superiority. I think that really gets in the way of helping people who are blue collar, whatnot. Like, why aren't we researching this? Why aren't we talking to these people? Why aren't we finding out what helps for them? Why are we just accepting these blanket? Oh, these guys don't want to talk. It's their problem. No.
Not that we don't want to talk. We can't. We've tried talking, right? And, like, here's the thing. I'll tell you, I'll get real personal for a minute. My mental health this year was in the shitter, right? In the absolute shitter. I felt like I couldn't talk about it. And here's why. I felt like things were falling apart in my personal life, right? They weren't, but, like, my mind was like, you know, hey, I heard something, I saw something, and I went with it, and I didn't talk about it, right? And, you know, it really makes me feel a little bit bad for my dad, right? Like, he didn't have the tools that I have now, and he didn't have the podcast to listen to, and he didn't have women in his life like I have in mine, which, thankful for my wife, you know, how she held on this year, I don't know. But, like, my own family told me, or told her, that if we got divorced, they were ride or die for her, right? So men and women, they divorce, right? If a man wants to leave, he's villainized immediately by society. No matter what the woman did, right? The woman could have done so much shit not to help out that, like, you know, it doesn't matter. The man was supposed to be there to provide, and he was supposed to be the caregiver. He was supposed to be that mental rock, right? Everyone's leaning on him. And so if he wants to leave, it's like, no, right? A man is the only one in a relationship that is legally obligated by contract to his marriage. A woman can up and leave whenever she wants, right? Now, if the woman wants to leave, it's girl power. You go, girl. You go get that independence. You leave that man, right? And that's hard. That's hard to hear, man. You know what I mean? Like, you constantly got society telling you, hey, you ain't shit. Lots of women be like, hey, us women, we don't need no man. Men ain't shit, right? And then to go hear that, like, okay, fuck, that's tough. We want to talk, but we can't because we're constantly being told we're wrong. We're villainized, right? My own family, my sisters, my own family, dude. We ride or die for you. I'm the one that's fucking blood with you. You know what I mean? Like, when a man leaves, he leaves with the clothes on his back, maybe. Right? A woman leaves with everything, including the man's family, including friends, including, you know what I mean? So that's just one side of it, dude. That's just the one side of the mental health side, right? Then you got to go to work, and then, you know, you got all this shit. Like, man, there's a lot to unpack there, right? Like, you know, I don't even know if we have enough time. I don't even know if we –
it's huge. Like, you can talk about it all day, but, you know, you brought up something that is entirely accurate, and it's something that – see, one thing that frustrates me in the white-collar world, why I've never really fit in with a lot of my peers, is I just kind of say what everyone's thinking. But we live in this world of political correctness in our world, and we've got to be so careful. This men have kind of been under attack for quite some time. Like, you know, there's a lot of this stuff about, oh, toxic masculinity. Men are, you know, not addressing this or not addressing that. People aren't realizing the impact that's having on men and how they perceive themselves. And it's built on this belief that masculinity is almost inherently wrong in some way. And I dispute that. I don't think that's true at all. I don't think masculinity, femininity, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with either. But there's so much demonization of masculinity. Like, you look at it, you can see it in the school system, you can see it in sports, you can see it in the workplace. But really, we're not... by demonizing it, what are we doing? Like, we're not creating, you know, self-esteem in people. We're not making confidence in men to, you know, talk about what's going on. We're just kind of pushing it to the side. And then in the therapy world, you know, most therapy models, there's not a lot out there that's designed specifically for men. Stuff is either gender kind of neutral or very much based on feminine healing, things like that. And that's one thing that frustrates me a lot, is demonizing men. And it's detrimental. You're seeing the stats now, boys are falling behind and everything in school, whatnot, and it frustrates me. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with masculinity, and I think we're failing men. And, you know, with mental health, we really have to recognize that what men face are different than what women face. The brains are different biologically.
Oh yeah. It's not an us versus them thing either, right?
It's not
versus women. And that's been put out there. It's men versus women. And maybe the way I was explaining it, it kind of maybe came off of us versus them too, but it's not. It's an us, men and women, versus the problem, and the problem is winning.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, the way to address the problems, what comes up for women and what comes up for men, are different. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It doesn't need to be a war, but you're right, it's become a war. And, you know, it's just not helping anyone.
Absolutely not. So you said that you have a therapy dog or a guide dog or whatever?
Yeah, I got... service animal, PTSD dog.
Okay.
I developed PTSD with some of the work I did earlier in my career. I did outreach for HIV/AIDS in Africa, the UN. So I'll spare you all the details. And then I worked up north in the Arctic, remote reserves, where, you know, you're the nurse, you're everything. And, you know, that wears on you in time. And I had to take a good year off from mental health from my career. And that's, did some different programs, went to a great treatment program for PTSD and first responders, took some time off, became a flight attendant, which was awesome. For the first time, it was a job I was like, all right, I actually enjoy going to work. And, you know, kind of just been rebranding since then and, you know, figuring out, yeah, I can't force myself to fit into a system that doesn't work for me. Kind of got to do my own thing.
Oh, I love that, man. Like, you could see your own issues, and you knew, you had the tools, right? And if you didn't have the tools, you went out and acquired those tools, right? You're like, hey, you know what? This doesn't work for me. I gotta go and I gotta figure shit out. I gotta figure out what is gonna work for me, because if I don't, it's just gonna snowball.
It does. And you know, the thing is, a lot of people don't even know what tools they have available to them. Like, people have employer health benefits. That's how I got into a private facility for PTSD. Yep. And they did a great job, like 7-8 weeks there, just really tackling issues. But the tools, we just don't really even know what's out there. There's tons of pamphlets, like call this number, call that, you know, wait list, 6 months, whatever. But there is more out there, and people absolutely just sometimes need help finding it.
Do you know what a good place is? My wife wanted me to read some books this summer. She's like, you need to read some books. You need to like watch, listen to some self-help podcasts, maybe go get some therapy. And I agree with that 100%. I didn't want to hear it from her at the time. So I was like, nah, shove that shit up your ass, right? I don't want to hear that shit. And she's right. I do need some therapy, 100%. Everybody does. But what I found really helps too, podcasts. I listen to a lot of good podcasts, but also TikTok and Instagram Reels. You know what? There is anything you want is on there. You can type in how to get away with murder, and you're going to find the videos for it. You can type in, you know, bukkake parties, and you're going to find the fucking videos for it. You can type in mental health, how to let go of resentment, how to let go of all the hate, and how to fix your marriage. And it's there. It is there, right? Now you got to be careful. A lot of it is, you know, there's a lot of shit there. But like, you know, you gotta find what you think is going to help you. And maybe not just watch the videos. Maybe read the books on top of watching the videos. And then you gather all the information and then pick and pull and curate yourself.
I couldn't agree more. Honestly, that's kind of how I stumbled across you, was a reel. But also, you know, there was a reel that just spoke to me one day. I was on a layover, and I hired this guy as my personal trainer, life coach, to kind of get back in shape, build a routine, get ready to go back to, you know, my work. It was this reel where he's just going, like, talking to a guy, you know, virtual, and he's like, commit or quit. What's it going to be? What's it going to fucking be? Commit or quit? And I just kept watching it. I ended up messaging him, hiring him, and then, you know, just jumping in, doing all this work. And, you know.
What was his name?
His name's Jeff Davis. He's out of the States. And, I traveled down there, met him. I did the diet, the workout. And even at the time, like, I've been told all the time about diet and mental health and sleep hygiene and everything. And I've even given that advice, but actually doing it and having this guy that's really intense holding me accountable. I saw what you ate in the app last, you know, week. That's why your sleep isn't good. Eat this or do that.
Yeah.
I just followed his advice, and oh my God, it worked.
Well, dude, like, if you eat sugar or eat too close to bedtime, it spikes your insulin, right? And then you're going to have a shitty time sleeping, right? I try not to eat too much sugar before bed. I try not to eat an hour or two before bed because it's just going to spike your insulin. And I've noticed that. A buddy at work told me that. The guy at work that I thought was a douchebag because all he did was work out all the time. He was a gym rat. And he had these – you know that guy on TikTok and Instagram? He's like, heart check time, motherfucker, right? And he's like –
yeah.
Time to level up, big dog. Level up.
I know exactly. I follow him. I love that guy.
Level up Cole, right? At first, everybody thought this guy was a douchebag, right? Because the shit he was saying, you're sitting on the couch, you're eating cheesies, you're getting fat. No wonder why your life's falling apart, fat ass, right? Well, no, man. If you listen to that guy's message, maybe the delivery isn't the greatest. But if you listen to the message, that guy's only trying to help, right? And I worked with a guy that was exactly like that, you know? And I worked with him for a couple of years. French guy. We all thought he was arrogant. We all thought he was a piece of shit. He'd go to the gym every day. No, man, that guy taught me a lot. That guy, when you stop to talk to him, he's going through mental health shit, right? He got a divorce. His wife won't let him see the kids. He's going through this, that, and the next thing. And you know, when you stop to talk to him, you really start to read between the lines of what's really going on, and what he's actually saying is coming from experience. maybe the delivery is off and he could reword that a little better. But like, I know personally, I need it like that. I need it thrown at me like you're punching me in the face. I need that, right? And that's, that's really well for me working in my industry. I need to be yelled at sometimes, 100%. I need you to tell me I'm being a fucking idiot, you're being a moron, and you're a lazy piece of shit, right? I need that because once in a while I need to be snapped back into reality, and you know, we all get down, right? So.
No, totally. And that delivery works for me too. You know, what hasn't worked for me is the very kind of scripted, okay, let me give you a pamphlet on healthy eating and this will help your sleep. It's kind of like, oh yeah, sure, thanks. But no, I mean, with mental health, like just like with physical health, you have to put a little bit of work in, and that motivation is so hard to find when you're feeling like shit. But you know, you break it down, you do the work, you put that effort in. And I think one of the reasons we, you know, initially see these guys as kind of arrogant, whatnot, I'm going to guess some of it, even though we're not going to want to admit it, comes a little bit from jealousy initially. Because look, they're doing it. They've got this confidence that, you know, we don't have. And, you know, comes across as, oh, what a douchebag. And that's what I thought about the guy who I ended up hiring. But then I was like, no, actually, this confidence is real. He's earned it. He's sharing it. And it comes from this place of caring. And it helped me. And yeah, but I mean, I think there's a bit in everyone that when we see that we're like, we're intimidated, and then maybe we are also a little bit jealous and don't want to admit it. That's okay. Well,
when I see you, when I read back on our messages, I had a hard time knowing because, like, you know, I get a lot of messages from a lot of people, and a lot of people try to sell me on shit and like, hey, do this and do that, right? But like, usually you can tell because like, with you, you weren't going away, right? Like, you weren't like, hey, he doesn't believe me, and, you know, like, I'm going to sneak back into my little hole and come up with something else. Your story never changed, right? And, like, for a little bit there, it was like, you know, what I pick up from you is that, like, you hit tons of roadblocks on your journey to where you are right now because you don't read your polytechnic and all this other shit and whatnot. And, like, you never let the roadblock stop you, right? You're like, hey, you know what? I'm going down this avenue now. I, you know, like, my end goal is this. I thought this was going to help me get there. Turns out that's not the right one. I'm not giving up. I'm just simply finding a new route. I'm taking a detour. And how many detours did you take before you got here, right? And that's what I picked up from reading back on our messages and seeing, you know, what you had to say and whatnot. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, life is full of detours. Like, I mean, I've worked with so many people that are unhappy in their job, unhappy in their situation. But when it comes up to kind of making the decision to change, especially big change, it's terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
Because it shakes everything up. Like, the first big decision I ever made was to leave Alberta Health Services, you know, where it's comfy, predictable shifts, good income, pension, everything. I left there and went for a nonprofit where I could actually do the type of psychiatric nursing care that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
But it was about a 50% pay cut. Did I have to completely change my lifestyle? Yeah. But I adjusted. And then from there, I tried a number of different avenues. I've always kind of known that at the end of the day, working for myself, being my own boss was the goal, the dream. You know, it's scary to jump in there. You got to factor all that stuff in. And I think it gets harder. Like, if you've got kids, you're married, all that, it's harder to make those decisions. And then what a lot of people rely on is, okay, and I'm not bashing meds at all. Meds are great. They help people tremendously. But if the issue is the lifestyle and you got to really make big change to be happy because you're not, if you can't make that change because situation, whatever, all they can really do is throw pills at you. And I worked with this therapist once who she used to do cartooning, these funny cartoons. And she had this one of a a blue pill. And it's like, she's like, you know, little blue pills help you stay stuck in the life that made you unhappy in the first place. And the pill is screaming, why be sad when you can be numb? And we do a lot of that in society. And yeah, making big change is scary. And you just kind of jump in and do it. And I've just done that so many times. I just keep going. And but it's not easy. There's dark days for sure.
100%, man. 100%. So like you were saying, you know, like you jumped in this and you were talking to men and whatnot, like about or work away blue collar people, you know, and that you quickly realized that you know, the thing is, it's not that we don't want to talk, it's that no one is listening. No one wants to listen. Why talk when no one's gonna listen? We want to talk, we do. No one's listening. So like, what are some of the conversations that you had? Like, what are some of the you don't have to say names, you don't have to go into great detail, but like, what are some of the takeaways that you had from these conversations? Like, you know, give me some examples, I guess.
Well, I think one of the more memorable ones I had was, you know, it was a, there was a guy waiting for the bathroom on the plane. So of course we're chatting and I don't know, buddy in the bathroom's taking a dump. I don't know. It's taking forever. So we're chatting away and then,
he's on the throne.
Yeah. Yes, he was. And, you know, I am trying to make some conversation initially, that awkwardness of just standing there like, oh, you want a Diet Coke or something? Okay, great. And then, so what do you do? And he's like, well, you know, I'm a pipe fitter, but I just, this is my last assignment. I'm going home. I got laid off early. And I'm like, oh, sorry to hear that. And I was like, if you mind me asking, how soon until you maybe get another job or recalled? How does that all work? And he's like, the longest I've had is 2 years. He's like, and he's like, it's terrifying to me. He's like, you know, I've got kids at home. I've got a wife. You know, now I've got to figure out how to get all this money to work and last and EI. And, you know, she might have to get a job and then who's going to take after the kids. And I was like, no, I said, oh, that, yeah, it's pretty stressful. I said, you know, I was like, I am a, you know, therapist by training. And it's like, you know, all we've ever been taught about kind of you guys and in the trades is, well, men don't want to talk. And he's like, yeah, no. He's like, that's bullshit. He's like, no one understands the reality of our work. He's like, you know, we get these checks, we go home, they think we just party, blow it all, and we're making tons of money for nothing. And he's like, that's just not true at all. We don't know when our next paycheck might be, when the next job might be, whatnot. And it really rung true. And I told him, not to bash my brother-in-law, a good guy, but he's an engineer that's very much the type that he's got his engineering degree, and when he goes to the sites, he expects everyone working there in the trades to look up to him and bow down to him.
Kiss the ring.
And I just kind of listen to him like, uh-huh, yeah, how's that going for you? Oh, okay. It just reminded me of a conversation I had, you know, with him, where he's just like, oh yeah, these guys with their, you know, they only have to go to school for 2 years or whatnot, and they don't have to have a degree. And, you know, I've got a degree and they're looking down on me. They're not respecting me. And, you know, do they get paid hundreds of thousands for, you know, this simple work? And, you know, they're making more than me, blah, blah, blah. I've got a degree. And I'm thinking, you don't even have the slightest clue what these guys are doing. But it really, I kind of connected the two then. And I told this guy about, you know, my brother-in-law in the conversation, and he's just rolling his eyes. And he's like, you know what? He's like, that's just, he's like, it's so frustrating. And he's like, we see that all the time. And I've had other conversations with guys going into camp who, you know, word got around that I was a nurse, that I had this knowledge, would come up to me in the galley and be like, hey, like, you know, I'm going into camp. There's no alcohol there. I think I might've been drinking too much, partying too much while I was away, but I didn't want to see my doctor. I can't see the nurse when I'm there. Like, do you think I'm okay? Asking real kind of health questions. And I'm like, well, you know, tell me a bit more. I can kind of, you know, see what I can advise. But there's a lot of fear of kind of speaking out. A lot of these themes of just being misunderstood. And then a lot of things where I can see where the current system would just be judging people. Like, you know, if you've got this judgment in your mind that comes from kind of the white collar training and world, it's not going to bode well when working with blue collar people. Like, I met guys up there that, you know, they've had criminal records and past, and they've completely turned it around. Some amazing stories, amazing guys. But in our world, it's almost as simple as, oh, you know, John got a DUI. Oh, stay away from him. Oh, no, no, he has nothing to contribute. These judgments, and I just get why blue collar men and, you know, people in the trades, they're not wanting to talk to people, trained therapists, whatnot. Yeah. There's just no understanding between.
I just want to clarify though that it's also not just the blue collar men; it's the blue collar women too. A lot of blue collar women going through it as well, but yeah, they are viewed as still as a woman, and then, you know, they still get, you know, preferential treatment. But, like, you know, for the most part, you know, blue collar is blue collar. Women, men, we're all going through the same struggles, right? So, you know, yeah.
Yeah, no, they definitely go through the same struggles too. They're, you know, I met less of them, but, you know, their demographic's unique too among women. Because they, one thing I like about the blue collar in general is you guys are just so much more real.
Well, I said that to you last night, right? We were talking last night, and hold on, how did that go again? I can't remember how it went. It's right here, right? You said to me, the coordinator. Okay, I'm not gonna read it all. We've been struggling to get the very white collar PR firm they have to understand why they are getting results, why they aren't getting results or interest in some of the apps or they're trying out. It's because they're bland and very sterile. And I said, yeah, we're blue collar folk are a very authentic bunch. Blue collar social media only works for those who are genuine about it. If you try to throw shit at us, we're going to see right through it, right? And that's so true. You know what I mean? Like, I've said 100 times that, you know, I want to quit my job and take a real run at full-time social media, right? And I could do it, right? It'd be easy. I'm right on the edge of that. But my whole social media has been built on being at work, making videos at work and going through it and being in the trenches. I could stay home with my family and I could take some, you know, high-vis jackets or coveralls and a hard hat, go find a pump. I'm in Alberta. There's pump jacks everywhere. I can find on the rig map where there's rigs, right? And I can go make videos at these pump jacks. I can put a little dirt on my face, get a little dirty, and make videos there and be home every night. It wouldn't be that hard, but it wouldn't be authentic. It wouldn't be genuine. And my people, that my niche, they would see right through it. They would see that and they'd be like, no, you're not one of us. Right. And so, you know, like, and, you know, like, I go the route I go because I am them and they are me. These are my people, right? And I am in the shit with them, right? You know what? Like, they're never gonna follow a guy that can't relate to them, right? And they'll see that. Same with what you just said about white collar people and whatnot. The pamphlets, the websites, they're bland. They're not genuine. We can tell you don't give a shit.
Oh yeah, and I mean, you know, working in the white collar world, especially when I was in management and whatnot, it's so fake. I can't even tell you, like, there is no room for authenticity or genuinity there. Everything is just overanalyzed. Every word, is this going to offend someone, whatnot, hierarchies, you know, stepping on people's toes. I just don't do that. It's just not something I'm good at. But the authenticity is a huge strength. If you can be authentic about things going on, and if you're trying to improve your mental health, you're already a leg up. Working with someone that is got a mask on and trying to keep a persona and an image for the white collar world is actually very hard to get them to take that off.
No, yeah.
And I, you know, I really appreciate that. Like, people would just tell me things how they were, and I'm like, all right, yes, like, thank you. But I also understand why, you know, when no one's been listening, or really paying attention or kind of has that attitude of looking down, they, you know, why people just wouldn't want to talk and engage. It's, it makes sense to me. But that authenticity, you know, I envy that from the, from your videos, everything. I'm like, God, I'm like, you know what? There's so many times in my career in nursing, whatnot, I wish I could post, you know, social media reels or whatever, kind of like yours, that would be entirely genuine and real. But oh no, I'd get called into HR, I'd get, you know, written up, fired immediately. Well, that's what leads to this kind of fake world. And so in a lot of ways, you guys have this ability, this authenticity that the white collar world just, it does not have. And that affects them in other ways. That affects their mental health badly as well.
Oh yeah.
But, you know, that authenticity in being able to be, you know, that's so much more powerful than you might think.
Oh dude, that is funny that you say that, right? A lot of people have told me that. I have a buddy who never worked in the oil and gas industry before. I met him. I met him when I was working on the road crew, so blue collar, right? And we were chatting, and we became good friends over the last 5 years. You know, like, his uncle is my boss, or was our boss, and then, you know, two of his uncles and his dad worked with us as well, right? And I got close to them, and every time, you know, my wife became friends with their wives, and my kids are actually going to the same school as their kids, and we all hang out, right? They become more like family. And yesterday, last night, I actually had a conversation with him. He got a job in south of Edmonton here, where he cleans all the used drill pipe. It comes back and they clean it, they inspect it, and he's working a crazy amount of hours. And we got to talking last night, and he's like, man, it's wild to me going from knowing you personally to going here where people are watching your videos while they were at work. And he's like, I know that guy, right? And he tells, hey, that's my buddy. We're friends. We're pretty much family, right? And they're like, no way. And then he'll call me. He calls me sometimes. He's like, man, who are you? I'm like, I'm Richard, you know? And he's like, no, man, you're going to make me look dumb here. Who are you? And I'm like, I'm Richard. I make videos on the internet. You might dig from, right? And they're like, oh, that's cool. But they're all like giving him high fives and shit like that. And they're like, man, I love hearing that. Like, thanks for what you do, man. Thanks for lightening up our day. You know, like, we're going through the shit. We're missing family. We're cold. We're hot. We're missing everything. And you put a smile on our face. You make us laugh, right? And that's fucking awesome. And he told me last night, he's like, man, he's like, I don't think you have any idea what you've built here. Like, and I've heard that a couple of times, and I didn't mean to do that. Right. I'm just out here having fun. I needed to laugh. I was struggling. I needed to laugh. I was missing my family. I was cold. I was hot. I was grinding it out. Right. I was going through it, and I needed to laugh. So I made what I thought would make me laugh. And him just listening to that from somebody that like isn't trying to kiss my ass or something, right? Was so cool, right? Because I get that a lot from people that don't know me, and they come up to me like, man, thank you, I appreciate that. And that's cool, putting a face behind that follower, behind that number, you know, like that's really cool. But coming from like a family friend, coming from like a brother, like an actual brother that says, hey man, I don't think you understand this. And he's like, and being in this world now, I see that, and I'm like, fuck, I'm drained. I'm missing things. I'm going through it. And he's like, that makes me laugh, but it means more to me because I actually know you. Right. And man, that's huge. That means so much to me, dude, because, you know, things even like this episode of this podcast, you know, this is going to help somebody, right? This will help somebody. I've gotten messages from other episodes we've had about mental health that I'm like, man, this is cool. Thank you. You know, Jersey Mike, big episode of mental health. The guy nearly drank himself to death. Gord from the Snack Podcast told me it's like we had a therapy session and hit record, right? And it was incredible. That was one of my favorite episodes I've ever done. Brian Andrews, one of the most powerful moments on my podcast, said to me, sometimes you don't want to wake up. You go to bed, and sometimes the worst thing that happened to you that day was that you opened your eyes and you woke up, right? Mm-hmm. And that's powerful shit, man. That hurts. You know, can you imagine how much that took for him to say that?
Yeah. And it's good because that's reality. And it's, you know, no one wants to think that, you know, when it happens to them, don't really, you know, when you're feeling depressed, you're very self-focused, right? This is happening to so many more people. And yeah, no, it takes a lot to say that, but it helps people. When he says that someone else can relate, you know, then they feel a little bit better about their situation. And, you know, it's when they talk about, oh yeah, talking about mental health and Bell Mental Health Talk Day, all that. I've got some beefs with that because it's not always, there's a lot of jobs like airline pilots where talking about mental health, oh shit, like that's a big no-no. Their safety regulations are so backwards. It's insane. But, you know, there's a lot of talk and then not a lot of doing or follow through. And the first reel of yours that I, you know, came across where you were talking about Men's Mental Health Month, which I feel like there's five different men's mental health months now. But anyway, yeah. I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, this is genuine. I was like, well, let me pay a bit more attention to this guy. Like, he's talking the truth. It's not lip service about like men's mental. There's no shortage of that out there. You know, yours was just, it was just real. So,
yeah, I appreciate that, man. You know, and like this whole podcast, you know, this is here to help. Like the whole social media journey started because of mental health, and the podcast was just like, okay, how can we take the minute long clips? You know, because back then, a minute long was the only, it goes up to 10 minutes now, but like the minute long clips, who's going to sit there and watch a 10 minute long TikTok video? You know, we're so busy with that instant gratification. We just want to
scroll. Yeah.
If you're here, if you click on a podcast, you're in it for the long haul, right? Like you make that physical or that mental decision that like, hey, this is going to be an hour, hour and a half long type thing. All right. But those minute long videos, 30 seconds, if we're being real here, that anyone really pays attention to or less, you know, you can't get much information from that. Get an hour and a half long podcast going. Talk about the shit here that I can't talk about there. I'm busy being funny over there, right? I'm busy being funny and having a good time. Here I'm being funny, having a good time, but also adding in, you know, things you can take away from it, right? And I thought that was so huge. And I'm going to get into this. The podcast is sponsored by Brasco Safety and NWT Safety now, right? Because why? Why do I want to do that, right? What's going through people's minds when they're like, I got to get a job. I got to get this. And the mental health part of that is finances. How am I going to afford a pair of new boots? How am I going to afford this? How am I going to afford that? Well, like Brasco Safety, NWT Safety, you know, if you use code FROST89 or FROST10, I think it's FROST10. Use code FROST10, you save 10% on your boots, right? You go there. I have these poker chips now. I don't know if you've seen my videos talking about the poker chip.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, man. I hide them in the mall. People have found them. They've said, hey, man, I found a poker chip here. I found a poker chip there. You see me on site, you get a poker chip. You take that to NWT Safety. You get the top tier discount on PPE, which is huge. Just taking like a top tier discount, 70, even if it's 50%, that's 50% less you're paying on shit you're going to need to go to work, right? Here's a little bit of your financial load gone. And that's huge because I've been there. I've said this on the podcast before. As a guy who 5 years ago was on the outside looking in, I'm on the inside looking out now, and I'm seeing all these people trying to get in. And it's like, hey, if you're on the outside looking in, here's a chip, here's a discount code. Take it. And if you don't see me and can't get the disc, if you can't find the chip because you don't see me, don't run into me, just go there and mention the chip and it still acts as the same thing. We've been working on that, right? And that's crazy, man. You know, and then the podcast 4 or 5 months ago now, we're working on more stuff here with BetterHelp. BetterHelp is sponsoring the podcast too now, right? Like they've been cool. We forgot we didn't add one last critical piece of paperwork, so that's taking a lot longer than we thought it was going to take, but that's submitted now. We're getting somewhere with that. BetterHelp sponsors the podcast now, which is kind of crazy. It's unofficial as of right now, but the conversations have been had, right? And you know, that's my way of giving back, mental health, right? You're going to get some help. You know, and that's, man, this whole journey has led me to today's episode, right? And that's, man, I know a guy who has his own mental health and addictions counseling service. And he's on my podcast and he's saying, hey, I'm listening. And I'm not just listening to speak, to tell you what you want to hear. I'm listening with both ears and I'm here to listen, you know, and that's huge.
Yeah, no, I learn a lot because, you know, I really want to help the demographic, and I've got some ideas, some different pitches. I mean, there's so much work to be done. I'm just starting. But, you know, I see so many opportunities to kind of address that brick. And, you know, this industry, I think, is in a very good spot for those options.
Absolutely.
But I got some ideas, some plans. As you know, there's tons of work to do, and paperwork takes forever.
Oh, yeah. Trust me. We know what that's like with the permits. Yeah. Waiting a couple hours for permits at times. You know, by the time the permit comes, you got half a day left.
Yeah. So regulatory paperwork for counseling and insurance billing and everything is just, yeah, that's my stack of papers for the past month or so. But, you know, really, I take it all in, and it's exciting. So
what's the website you've started? It's up now, right?
Yeah. It's www.archangelamh.com. So my last name and then AMH for addictions, mental health. And we got our website up. We're tweaking it. We're working on it, getting different photos. We've got online bookings and, yeah, it's a work in progress, though.
So you still got online bookings. Do you do things in person as well?
Yeah, I'm based in Calgary. So actually, I like in person more. And especially if going to people's homes, you get so much more out of that. And then talking with family, whatnot. But, you know, for all of Alberta, online. And trying to convince some... I would really love to get into some work camps to trial like a counselor on site type of thing. I just, you know, from the feedback I've gotten on the committee with these guys, everyone thinks that's a really good idea. So do I.
Great idea. It's a great idea.
You've got to find someone to give it a try. And that person's got to be independent. They can't be like the OH&S nurse that works for the company. Yeah. They got to be independent, you know, and, that's kind of the project that I'd like to get into.
But, see, yeah. In my space here, I bump shoulders with these guys all the time, like top engineers and like top dogs at, like, you know, these companies. Like, I'm at Suncor right now, right? Friends, not friends, but like I mingle, right? And I can put that in the air. Some of these people listen to my podcast. Some of these people like my content, right? They come up to me and they're like, hey, man, you're not really supposed to make these on site, especially up there, right? Like, everywhere else in the oil field is fine with me doing it. They know, yeah. Like, hey, Dick's gonna put his work ahead of it. But, like, you know, these people here, they're the war against them has been fought online, right? So they only see online as the enemy. They don't know yet that we're here trying to help. We're trying to bring more of a spotlight and help do this. Like me, Blaine Borley, Jason, Tyler Allison, all these content creators. If I've missed your name and you listen, I'm sorry. This is just off the top. But like we're trying to shine the spotlight and be like, hey, we're people working in these industries and we're just here doing good, right? Stop shitting on us. Stop shitting on the company, right? Like, stop it. And you know, they don't see that yet. They're not there, unfortunately. I think some of them within the top branches, they see the importance. They see it, they like it, but it's convincing, you know, that thought, that mindset to spread, right? And you know,
yeah,
by having these conversations, I could put the word out into a couple people's ears that I know, right? And you know, I've always said that between, you know, psychologists and massage therapists like chiros and massage, I always said, have that shit in camp. That shit in camp, not only would whoever's doing it make a fuck ton of money, but it's needed. You know, how many times you in for a couple of weeks and you're like, oh, I got a backache. You know, oh, I can't wait to get home in 2 weeks so I can get a chiro and a massage, right? No, it's a chiro and a massage down the hall. Book your time and go get it, right?
Well, and then they're going to get what it's like living there too, right?
They will understand it as well, right? Yeah. Exactly. And psychology, say, man, you put – you know, you put a psychologist in a dark room, have the guy sitting on that little lazy boy chair, talking about his feelings, man. And you know what? I think we could solve a lot of these problems, you know, that are happening after work. You know, mm-hmm. like, you know, when the guy goes home from, because of all the mental shit he's carrying at work, he goes home and takes it out on his family, or whatever happens at home, he takes it back to work with him and then he bottles it up even more. I think we could solve a lot of those issues just by having someone like you in camp.
Oh yeah. And that's what I got actually, you know, a lot of the guys on the plane, in addition to the counsel, yeah, they mentioned massage. That was a big one. No, I think that is the right, you know, direction to give a try to. What you were saying about kind of the not understanding the social media piece. Yeah, my sister does PR for British Petroleum.
BP, yeah.
We've had many, she's in London at their head office, but we've had many arguments about that before. And I've like told her, I said, have you actually been to any of the sites where your workers are that you're concerned about posting on social media? Oh no, why would I go there? I said, okay, well, maybe you should do that. And I have seen a progressive shift in her over 2 years now that she started to do that, from being completely like, oh, anyone wearing this hat, oh, bad for image, oh, we got to shut that down, to no, actually for them, this seems to be doing something. She's making that shift, but how they're trained and, you know, the world, the white collar world, the masters of communications and all that.
Yeah.
It's just a whole different world. They don't get it. Their brain doesn't think that way. They don't see it.
Yeah. So. I know in our communications over the last 6-7 months or whatever, I know you said you wanted to pick my brain a little bit. I don't know if I've helped you with that, or if you have anything you want to ask me that we could talk about on here as well. Like, I don't know what your plan was there, but like, if you have anything to ask, man, I'm an open book. You can try.
Well, I've been picking your brain for months. Maybe yeah. You didn't realize it.
Oh no, I realize it, but like but differently, right? Cause I realized when you were doing that though, I was also giving you very short answers, right? Because mm-hmm. like, texting, fucking hate that. If you wanted to get anywhere, we need to talk like we're talking, or call, right? And I should have led with that, man. You want to talk, we call me, right? Call me anytime, right? But like, at the same time, I also wasn't in the right mental space to, you know, talk like that, right? I was very concentrated on work. And I don't know if you noticed or anyone noticed, but I took a little social media, like a little step back from social media this year. If it did, it had nothing to do with the podcast. I was just reposting old videos. Sometimes I would make a new one, but I wasn't completely there, right? And all the ideas were kind of like, oh my God, this is like work and I gotta think harder, right? Well, now I'm doing better. The ideas are back to where they were before, where it's like I see something, I'm like, boom, all right, I got something for that immediately. Let's go. I know how to make it relatable, right? Without even making it feel like work.
Well, you know what? I have been dying to get your feedback on the website that Ashley and I are making, because we are different. Like, our image is different, everything. But we're trying to just find a way to appeal and make services that actually kind of will work for people. And your logo, we want the feedback.
Your logo, like, is badass to start. Like, badass.
I know, and you know, we have merch like for companies, and I was like, you know what, we're not doing any of this traditional stress ball and cheap whatever. Like, we've got a survival knife, like, you know, actually useful tool. Someone pointed out the irony to me of that after, like, a therapist with a knife for sale, that's unique. And I was like, yeah, well, I didn't think about it from that angle. I was like, but it's still cool. And you know what? So we're trying to just do things differently, but actually in a way that works for people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just like any feedback, and as harsh as it is, as soft as it is, whatever, like, you know, we're trying something kind of new, novel, and yeah, no, but I've been picking your brain, watching your videos. You've given me a lot more info than you think. And
so what do you
follow a few with? Other guys.
What do you come up with then? Like when you're seeing like and your opinions or what you see when you look at me, like what do you when you're picking my brain? Like I'm curious to know now. And I get like this with everyone when I go get a massage, right? And I notice the massage therapist is touching one area. I'm like, okay, what do you see back there? I ask every time, right? I'm like, okay, what do you see? What do you notice? What can I do differently? Chiro, right? The chiropractor is like, you know, spending a little time in one spot. I'm like, okay, what are you noticing? I thought I was having back issues. Turns out my rib is out, right? My rib pops out and you feel that in your back, right? It's not a back issue at all. My back's fine. My rib is out. I go see chiro for my rib now, right? And I've been seeing the same chiropractor for almost 10 years. And he's like, same issue today, bud? I'm like, yeah, maybe this time it's on the other side, right? And he's like, absolutely. And we work on that issue, right? And he's become a good friend. I go now more for the conversation than anything. You know, sometimes I'm not even feeling anything. I'm home on days off. You know, I'm going to go help my good buddy, Brian. Right. You know, I'm going to go sit there and chat with him. And he's like, hey, man, don't forget to bring the Starbucks with you, too. You know, the Tai Chi latte or whatever the hell it is. And, you know, yeah. I love that guy, you know, and he's become more of a buddy than a doctor, than my doctor. You know, he's my friend. So, you know, yeah. And I've helped him out with my socials. I've tagged him in. And, hey, you know, I'm here. I am on days off getting some chiro in today, you know, and show his business and stuff. And yeah, man, I do. Yeah.
Well, you know what? You are authentic and genuine. So whenever I watch your videos or I ask you, like, it's real. I'm not getting some scripted version, some PR whitewash type of thing. Like, I'm getting the hard, you know, truth or just the real picture. So I like that. I need that. That's kind of how I am. I'm not good at reading between the lines and all these very scripted statements, things like that. And what I get is, you know, you've got a real desire to kind of help people in your area. You're passionate about it, probably more passionate about helping the mental health of your coworkers than you think. And it comes from a genuine spot. Like, it's not for profit. It's not for, you know, any type of personal gain. Like I do see some of the official stuff that goes out from agencies trying to help, or even Health Canada when they're trying to help the mental health of people in trades, construction. And, you know, it's just, it's so predictable, scripted, you know, whatever. You're not. In fact, and I mean no offense by this, but you're going to agree with me, like, if I were to do a podcast with you and be attached to some fancy ivory tower organization, they'd be like, oh, controversy. Oh, this video, that, whatever. No, you know, you're not scripted. You're not fake. You're real. People know that. And as soon as you kind of are censoring yourself or anything, then it just doesn't have the same impact. So what I get from you is real. And that is actually what's helpful. Like, when I meet with patients, clients, I'm real. That helps me connect with them. But you can't learn from people and textbooks that where everything is just, you know, censored. And we live in a very censored world. Especially the white collar professional world. Oh my God. You know, that's where they come from with all these reels on site and these policies and stuff. Like, living and working in that world is exhausting for someone like me.
Yeah.
So I can tell, like, you know, I can tell someone, you know, has good intentions, kind of just, you know, and passion. That's the other thing. If you're passionate about something, you just end up being relentless and good at it. So, yeah, that's what I pick up on.
Hell yeah, man. I appreciate that. I worked with some companies, collaborating with some companies over the last couple of years. And one thing that I refuse to waver on is the genuine side of it, right? Mm-hmm. Because they said to me, they mentioned a couple times, they're like, well, they wanted me to script what I was going to say so they could approve it or not. And I'm like, I'm telling you, like, my niche, my community is going to see that, right? Like, if you want to be genuine about it, let me do it how I do it. And I don't ever plan, ever, right? My podcast, not planned. I don't go into an episode with any plans. My videos, most of the time, 99.99% of the time, I see something, I'm like, ooh, that'd be good. And I, like, the phone comes up and I just say what comes to mind, right? And now do I edit it every now and then? Okay, maybe if I said it this way, it'd be better. I delete it, I do it again, right? But it's always sort of within like a couple minutes, right? And they wanted me to submit a script and send it in for approval. It took like a month and a bit just to get one video out, one 30-second video out, right? And then they come back to me and they're like, can you be more genuine? Because I don't think that's nice. And I'm like, listen, what you want me to do is you want me to not be myself. You want to, right? And one of them where I was talking about the weather and they're like, well, what does the weather have anything to do with it? I'm like, listen, it has everything to do with it. We work outside, right? It's getting cold. We're all about to struggle for the next 4 to 5 months, right? And then they're like, all right, you know what? You do this and we'll see how it goes. We'll offer feedback on it. I put it out. It did better than and the other ones did because they censored what I wanted to do and said so much that I put my foot down and I was like, no, we're doing it this way this time. And even the script that I had given them, I veered from it. I'm like, you know what? Like they said, yes, do this. I'm like, cool. I did it my way. I sent it in to them and they're like, great. Right. They didn't want to argue with me because they
had no idea how much I appreciate that about you. When, cause I remember, I think yesterday I asked you, I said, oh, do you want me to prep for any questions or stats or stuff? Cause that's what people always are asking me to do. And then you're like, no, just chat. And I'm like, really? Well, this is great. And it made me think of, cause one of the things that's always helped me connect with patients, families, whatever, has been just being very matching their energy, genuine. And I can think clearly to this time when I had a job that was doing psych consults on medical units in the hospital. And I was talking to a brother about his sister who, you know, couldn't speak for herself. She was very critically ill. And he's trying to explain their relationship and what her life is like. And he's trying to be very politically correct and dodging. But I knew what he was trying to say.
Yeah.
So I sat there and I was new to that role. So I had a nurse supervising me, a senior. And I said to him, so would you describe your sister's life as white trash? And he's like, yes, absolutely. He's like, that is exactly what I'm saying. And I was like, okay, yeah, I get the picture now. And then she pulled me aside after and was like, yeah, how dare you use that language, blah, blah, blah. And I said, look, I get that, but I know exactly what he's trying to say and trying to summarize. And I was like, see how it built that connection. And then he opened up and he told me all the stuff he was trying to delicately word. I said, it built that connection. She's like, well, you're a professional. You can't be saying something like that. And I was like, well, you got to know your audience and whatnot. And that was also a moment where I was like, I don't think this job is going to work out long term.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I wouldn't walk up to anyone and say that, right? But I gauge what is kind of, you know, how the person talks, the language they relate to, what they're trying to say, and that builds relationships. And as soon as you kind of waver on that and have to go scripted, you're just not as effective. Like, I know I'm not, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Where do you see this going for you, like, long-term? Like, what's your five-year plan? Do you have a five-year plan? Like, is it a two-year plan? Is it a 20-year plan? You know, like, where do you see this plan?
I kind of ride the waves. I've learned to do that in life. You know, you get ups, you get downs. I would really like to, the ultimate goal, which I don't even know how many year plan this would be, but I would love to eventually have an addiction treatment center that's geared exactly for people in your industry, staffed by people who are in the know, who are the right fits, Getting to that point is difficult without taking a lot of, there's a lot of easy shortcuts when you start your own practice. Like I could go to WCB and get a contract where they send me people for assessments and limit it to 5 sessions, but I don't want to do that because then what happens is you end up trying to get those contracts renewed. They're lucrative and you're not getting renewals unless you're denying people.
Yeah.
That's just not me. I want to be very independent, maverick kind of, and that's going to be slow.
That's but, your name on Instagram, Maverick.
Yeah, it is. Oh, I threw my phone up there because it was beeping and distracting me. Just fell on the floor. I want to, you know, kind of build a client base, reassess, figure out what's working, what's not, see about finding some employers up in the camps that maybe want to give on-site a try. And whatever is working, we'll continue. Whatever isn't, we won't. I'm in the process of recruiting a psychiatrist partner to refer people to. I'm also looking at finding within Calgary, I want to offer in-home psychiatric nursing services, which no one knows what that means because we just don't do it. But that can be going to, you know, someone's house, you know, their husband's depressed, not getting out of bed, whatnot, meeting with him every week, assessing how he's doing, getting him up, going for a walk, all that stuff. We don't really do that in Canada. They do it in the UK. It's really effective. But we're just going to see how it goes. And Ashley, who I call her my manager, but I hired her to be manager of admin, tech, ops, whatnot. She's awesome. We're just kind of having fun trying different things. And we're going to go with what works. We're going to change what doesn't. And just try to stay. Well, we are. We are. That's not a negotiable. We're going to stay authentic. Yeah. We're not going to sell out. We're not going to, you know.
That's huge. You got to do that. In a world,
we're not going to go to easy routes.
In a world full of authenticity and copycats, man, you got to be yourself, right? You got to be genuine and you got to stay true to you.
And you know what? And if that takes time, it takes time. Because, you know, I also really like flying as a flight attendant. You know, business is a little bit low right now, but I plan to go back and do that. If I'm combining the two to make an income, whatever.
Would you say it's low altitude?
It's what?
The business is a little low altitude at the moment.
Well, you know, that would be a fair way to describe it. I mean, there's just not a lot of demand right now. So there's not many flights, but yeah, business low altitude. That actually is a good descriptor. Yeah.
Man, see that, man. Ah, fuck. I'm proud of myself for that one. I'll pat myself on the back.
I like that. That's a good one.
Man, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. It's almost lunchtime here. I'm going to go hang out with the wife and kids. My daughter's actually homesick today. So like, you know, I only got, 5 days left before I go back to work. So, you know, those days fly by, but, I don't know if there's anything else you want to cover or not. But I usually finish up the podcast with one last question, but if you want to take the floor for anything before then, and you know, they all be my guest, man. And it's yours.
No, you know, I can't think of anything novel to say.
That's fair, man. Mount Rushmore has 4 of the most influential people on the rock, right? In history, possibly. If you had your own Mount Rushmore, 4 people that you look up to, inspired to be, or that inspired you, who would be on your rock and why? It doesn't have to be just 4 either. You can have more, you can have less. It doesn't matter. And it could be real, not real, dead, alive.
Rosa Parks.
When sitting at the back of the bus wasn't cool, she wanted to see.
Be there. I would definitely have Rosa Parks. I'd have Nancy Grace.
Oh, shit.
Seriously, yeah.
Nancy Grace from like CNN?
Yes, I would.
She hasn't even been on there in a long time now, has she? It's been a couple of years.
I'd have Judge Judy.
Judge Judy. All women. Look at this guy.
Yeah. And, you know, the type of people that inspire me, they're always, they're people that kind of rebel against the system, stand up for what they believe in. Like Rosa Parks did that. Nancy Grace can be kind of loud in your face, whatnot. She does those crime things. I don't always agree with what she's saying or exploring, but she just digs and gets in there hardcore. Yeah. And I've always found that very interesting. Just, you know, people that stand up for what they believe in, even, you know, someone like Edward Snowden, you know, he exposed all that information. He was a whistleblower. I think what he blew the whistle on maybe was something people already kind of knew about, and it didn't have as big of an impact as he was hoping, but he still did that. And, you know, it just takes guts to stand up for what you believe in, to pursue things. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, always as a kid, Rosa Parks was just, you know, every school project, everything. She's always just, I'm like, I like this woman. Just, she wasn't in a big position of authority or power, and she just said, no, like, no.
I'm nobody. You know? That's what it takes. It takes a bunch of nobodies to make change, right? That's the whole thing with society today. If more nobodies stood up, we'd get more done. Right, we're all looking to people that we think are somebodies. Like, look at even our politicians are using celebrity endorsements. They think, and that didn't work out so well for Kamala Harris in this election, right? Because she went hard on celebrities, right? She thought the people are like, look at these high power celebrities. The people can relate to them. We can't relate with multimillionaires and billionaires. What the fuck are you on, right? Like, you want somebody to relate with you? Go find yourself a nobody. Go find yourself like a John down on 8th Street that you know, like, hey, man, you know, like, you're nobody, and why do you agree with me? Put the everyday man out there, and then you get somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be a Rosa Parks in a world full of Beyoncés.
Yeah, so, no, I mean, I've always been a bit of a rebel myself, so, yeah, she's definitely a favorite.
Hell yeah, man, that's awesome. That was three. You got one more, or, like, you're just going to stop at three?
Oh, I'm on the spot.
Yeah, Judge Judith Steinman.
Yeah, Judge Judy.
And Nancy Grace, all three badass women, by the way.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, you know what? There are more. It's just whenever I'm on the spot, it's like my mind just goes blank.
That's the point of it. That's the point of it, man. We spend all the podcast talking about all this. A lot of time, funny shit, serious shit, mental health. You know, we're having a good time. At the end, I just slam you with, hey, who do you look up to and why? Why do you look up to these people?
I'd say Abraham Lincoln, too.
Damn.
Now, he's a pretty popular one. But at the end of the day, you know, Honest Abe, he just spoke what was on his mind. What he did at the time wasn't that popular, but you know, for me, it's that him and then another politician like Winston Churchill, neither of those guys were, you know, politically correct, and what they said was pleasing everyone. They spoke what was on their mind. They led differently and effectively, and they achieved great things. But they didn't follow the grain. That's what I really like about them. And yeah, they've got some cool places in history.
So. You ever see that movie, Abe Lincoln, Vampire Slayer?
No, but I'm curious now.
Definitely the first worst thing to happen to Lincoln in a movie theater. That's for damn sure.
I'm going to have to check that one out.
I think it's called Lincoln, Abe Lincoln, Vampire Slayer. Dude, it was okay. Like, I watched it and, like, I was like, you know, like, but it was torturous at times. You know, you're just like, eh. And then there was another movie. It was called Lincoln. Abe Lincoln, Vampire Slayer was good. It was Lincoln. The movie Lincoln was the first worst thing that happened to Lincoln in the theater, for sure. Like, it was called Lincoln. It was my wife and I walked out of the theater. It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was horrible. Yeah. I was like sitting there trying to be like, but I watched all of Lincoln Vampire Slayer. It was the movie Actual Lincoln. Daniel Day-Lewis played Lincoln.
Oh, my kids vaguely remember it, but no, I watched the movie on, there were several movies on Churchill that came out at the same time, but the, I don't know, the big one, I watched it on Air Canada when I was flying to Beijing, and you know, there's a scene in the end where he's riding the tube and just asking common people, you know, what they think about British position with Germany, everything. And you know what? I was so impressed with him in that movie. Like, I'm sitting there, you know, I don't know how many hours I've been awake, and I start crying on the plane. Flight attendants looking at me serving the meal, like, is this guy okay? And I'm like, yeah, the chicken. Like, you know, impressive people, like, just,
yeah,
know, do things different. That's what I look up to.
One of my all-time favorite movies is Coach Carter. I don't know if you watch Coach
Carter. Yes.
Coach Carter is one of my all-time favorites. And then, you know, The Gray with Liam Neeson, that's probably up there. Yeah, man. I did you watch the 6888 yet?
No.
The mail carriers in World War II, the all black females that got the soldiers' letters home and to them. Soldiers' morale in World War II was in the shitter because they weren't receiving their letters from home and their letters weren't getting home, right? And they brought in the first all female black squadron or whatever to sift through the mail. They were supposed to, nobody could do it. Nobody had the problems to do it, but it took a woman's mindset to get it done because, like, they're just like, hey, we're connecting the dots here. You know, like the perfume, that perfume only is sold in this part of the world. Right. And it's like, oh shit. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then last names and names. And they were first, they were getting rid of dog tags. They were throwing the dog tags that were in the letters. They were throwing them away. Right. They're like, hey, you know, these don't mean anything. And then they had to, like, wait a sec. And they got it done. They sifted through like 17 million pieces of mail or something like that in 4 months.
You know, I should watch that because, yeah, that stuff, I'm always impressed by things like that.
It was pretty cool, man. It was really cool. It made me really pissed off. Not pissed off. It made me think about how pissed off Canada Post is because they were going through their strike at the time. And, you know, the all-female black letter couriers got so much praise and attention, and Canada Post is over here, and we're always like, fuck you guys. Like,
yeah, no, I've got a lot of respect for the post lady that comes to my building, you know, just that little bit of respect and hey, how you doing? And so the strike got canceled. How do you feel about that? You know, she appreciates that so much. Whenever I got something that needs a signature or whatever, she'll come upstairs, knock on the door. Like, you know, they don't get enough credit.
No, not at all, man. Buddy, I appreciate you coming on and you know, taking your time out of your day to talk about, you know, the big things you're doing and the help you're trying to, you know, it feels like the cavalry is on the way a little bit, right? Like, you know, for so long, it felt like maybe we're alone in this, right? And now it's like, hey, help is coming, right? Whether you are getting it from, you know, here or there, or you don't think anyone's listening, someone's listening, right? And yeah, man, thanks for that.
Yeah, well, it's good. Thanks.
Yeah, man, thanks for coming on, buddy, and thanks for, you know, being a part of this journey with me. So
no, thank you. I'm proud to be here.
Hell yeah, man. So you know, dude, hey, you stay frosty. And thank you. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, I appreciate it.